Case number 12-7009, Thompson Hine, LLP, and Ohio Limited Liability Partnership Appellant v. Lico Taib, an individual citizen of Florida and EC Distribution, Inc. Mr. Fuhrer for the appellant, Mr. Zaslow for the appellees.
I was looking at the wrong counsel. Sorry. Counsel may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Thomas Fair, and I represent Appellant Thompson Hine, LLP. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal if necessary. Based upon the bankruptcy of Appellee Smoking Everywhere, the only issue before this Court today is whether there was a basis for the District Court to assert personal jurisdiction over Appellee Lico Taib for failing to pay the debt that he owes for services of lawyers working in the District of Columbia to defend him in a lawsuit filed against him in Oregon. The District Court, whose decision is reviewed by this Court de novo, dismissed that claim because she concluded that Thompson Hine had failed to demonstrate a prima facie case that Mr. Taib had sufficient minimum contacts with the District of Columbia as to that claim. We contend that the District Court erred in so finding and that the case should be reversed and remanded. As is detailed in our briefs, there's a single inquiry necessary for establishing personal jurisdiction under District of Columbia law. That is whether the defendant had established minimum contacts with the district such that maintaining the suit does not offend traditional notions of fair play and substantial justice. Here, there's nothing that suggests anything unfair or unjust. At the outset, it's significant to note that in all the cases relied on by the district court and by both parties addressing fee disputes with District of Columbia attorneys, there's not a single case where a court has held that the district lacked personal jurisdiction to adjudicate those claims. There are three elements common to all of those decisions that also exist here. First, the defendant hired an attorney he knew practiced in the district. Second, the defendant knew that some portion of the work was to be performed in the district. And finally, the defendant did not pay for the services.
And explain that this case in the D.C. Court of Appeals decisions in view of Burger King? I read Burger King as saying what you just described is as being insufficient, that you need something more than an out-of-state entity signing a contract with a D.C. entity.
Well, there's certainly more, Judge Sattel, based upon the fact that Mr. Taib knew that he had been sued. He knew that these lawyers were going to represent...
Well, he wouldn't have hired anybody in Washington if he didn't know he had been sued.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I couldn't hear you.
You're talking about the Oregon case? Are you talking about the Oregon case?
Yes, the Oregon case.
Okay,
yes, sir.
Well, of course he knew about it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have hired Washington counsel.
Correct,
Your Honor. How does that help you?
It helps us because he knew that the work was going to be done in the district. And he knew that the work was, in fact, done in the district. And he knew that the fees were incurred in the district.
Uh-huh. And that's because of his prior relationship with Mr. Schwartz in the earlier FDA proceedings?
Well, it's based on several things, Your Honor. That is one.
In other words, what I'm getting at is, hypothetically, he hires a D.C. firm. That firm, because the matter's going on in Oregon, shifts all its work for the client out to Oregon. No work is performed in D.C. in connection with the Oregon litigation.
In fact, Your Honor, work was performed in D.C. in connection with the Oregon litigation. appearing in court in Oregon is not the only thing that happens.
And what's the evidence that work was done in D.C. for the Oregon litigation?
The affidavits attached in opposition to the motion to dismiss both describe the fact that all the work that was billed for was performed in the district.
But the district court said...
This is not a D.C. firm, right?
Well,
this is a firm that has an office in D.C. It's an Ohio firm.
Well, Your Honor, the firm has offices in many places, including D.C.
Right.
I think it is inaccurate to say that it's not a D.C. firm. They rent space here. They employ attorneys here. They pay their taxes here. You can look at, of all the cases that discuss fee disputes, none of them except one make mention of whether there are offices inside or outside the district. But one decision did. That was the digital broadcast case. In that case, there was a specific discussion of the fact that that firm also had offices in New York and New Jersey. The court pointed out that the engagement letter at issue in that case was written on the letterhead of the D.C. office.
The letterhead here was written on the Atlanta letterhead?
No, Your Honor. That's actually, as to the Oregon matter, it was on the D.C. letterhead.
What exactly, can you just tell us looking at the record, what exactly are the contacts the defendant had with your client on the Oregon matter? Not the FDA matter, but the Oregon matter.
Well, Your Honor,
the record.
Within the record, the contacts that he had, and under the analysis of transacting business under the D.C. long-arm statute.
No, I'm just asking about the facts of this case in view of Judge Jackson's findings. That's all. What were the contacts?
The contacts were...
Other than signing the retainer.
His contacts were, A, engaging Thompson Hine to represent him.
Okay.
B, having discussions with Mr. Heyer regarding that case.
Regarding the retainer?
No, regarding the conduct of the case.
Well, the district court said that there's no... that you hadn't shown. You said there were emails, but you didn't submit them, and she couldn't tell whether any of them were in connection with the Oregon case. Isn't that what the district court found?
Well, she did,
she
Your Honor.
Is she wrong about that?
She is incorrect, Your Honor.
So what do we look to in the record that shows that he had... You agree he never came to D.C. on the Oregon matter, correct?
Correct.
Okay, so where's the evidence of other telephone or email contact in the record?
Two things, Your Honor. One is Mr. Heyer's affidavit specifies that he had emails with Mr. Taib on both matters. You may also look to the fact that nowhere in the record does Mr. Taib deny that he had contact with anybody at Thompson Hine. And the law is clear that the district court must find in favor of the plaintiff where there are factual discrepancies on issues regarding personal jurisdiction. So there was evidence of contacts on the case, but more importantly, the case law out of the district says that a client will be deemed to have been transacting business if he knows or has reason to know that the lawyers were performing services for him in the district.
Yeah, and the question I asked you at the beginning is that consistent with Burger King?
I believe that it is, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, the question is...
In Burger King, the contract required any disputes to be resolved under Florida law. And, you know, there was a 20-year relationship, and as the court said in Burger King, the agreement between the franchisee and Burger King regulated all aspects of their relationship and the franchisee's business. And then it went on to say, just signing a contract, though, would not be enough.
I don't disagree, Your Honor, but I think that in this case...
So my question is digital, you rely heavily on digital, is that really... We obviously look to D.C. Court of Appeals decisions here, but not if they're inconsistent with Supreme Court law.
I don't think that it is inconsistent with Supreme Court or with Burger King to say that a client who knows that work is being done within the district and has requested that work be done be found to have sufficient minimum contacts so that it's not unfair for him to be hailed into, to know that he can be hailed into court when he fails to pay for those services. I see that my time is up, and I will sit until the rebuttal.
Counsel for Appalese.
Good morning. May it please the court. First and importantly, the plaintiff here was not a D.C. resident. The plaintiff here was an Ohio company, an Ohio law firm. The appellant's case here relies solely on the alleged signing of a contract, the alleged signing of a retainer agreement, regardless of the prior negotiations.
No. He says he hired this. He knew the two lawyers, and he knew them to be working in the Washington office. He hired two people who would do their work in Washington.
What the record actually indicates is that Mr. Story, the vice president of Smoking Everywhere, retained the Thompson Hine firm for the Oregon matter. And if you actually look at page 101 of the record, of the joint appendix, what Mr. Heyer says in his affidavit is that Mr. Story contacted me for Thompson Hine to represent Mr. Taib in Smoking Everywhere. There is no request in the record for a D.C. firm or a D.C. attorney.
Doesn't that hurt your case?
You're
saying it was Story and not defendant?
Yes, a third party, not Mr. Taib, according directly from the complaint in the exhibit, was the one who attempted to engage Thompson Hine on the Oregon matter, not Mr. Taib, who's the only appellee still in this case.
So then what's his connection at all?
Mr. Taib has no connections to the District of Columbia.
As the contract supported the hiring of the law firm on behalf of the company and the defendant.
That was the allegation of what Mr. Story did. But again, that is a third party.
Does that matter? I mean, if he was in fact acting on behalf of Mr. Taib, what does it matter whether it was true or not?
Well, because what this court and the Supreme Court jurisprudence has taught us is that a third party cannot bind a defendant to submit to jurisdiction. It must be the specific acts of a specific defendant.
But didn't he sign the retainer?
We've contested that.
But you didn't contest it in the district court.
The district court assumed that Mr.
Did you contest it below?
We did contest it below, yes.
Well, where did you contest that?
That is on page, I believe, 94 of the record.
What's the page in the JA?
I believe it is page 94.
94 of what?
It is Mr. Taib's affidavit. He says, it appears that Mr. Story signed the Oregon retainer on November 6, 2009.
If he were the authorized agent of Mr. Taib, that would be good enough, wouldn't it?
There must
There's
be
nothing in this jurisprudence or the Supreme Court to say if you can't act through an agent to get for the jurisdiction.
There must be some ratification of
not
that.
Not if it was authorized in the first instance. Now, what happened in Oregon? Did they go forward with the lawsuit?
The lawsuit proceeded, and I believe eventually it was.
And your client was president of the company, the CEO of the company.
Of Smoking Everywhere Incorporated, yes, Your Honor. Yes.
And he appeared to nobody else other than the attorney purported to appear for him.
He did not personally appear in Oregon, no, Your Honor.
Right. He appeared through counsel, if this is correct. Did they not purport to represent him in court?
Yes, we never quite got there in the district.
The CEO of the company did not seriously believe that somebody. He didn't go into default and not get counsel. He believed that this attorney representing the company was also representing him. That's the only thing that makes any sense.
We never quite got there in the district court, but ultimately, if we would have
gotten. You never got there in the district court.
Exactly. We never got there in the district court. The district court assumed that Mr. Taib knew that Thompson Hine would be representing him as Smoking Everywhere. We never quite got to whether he knew and if he did.
Isn't that a very reasonable assumption? He was CEO of the company. The litigation went forward. He wasn't appearing to anybody else. The attorneys purported to represent him in court. You're saying they did that without his knowledge?
This was a
he may be up for a shareholder derivative suit or something, but I'm not paying attention to his company.
There were very many issues which were actually noted in the complaint and other places in the record of issues between Mr. Story and Mr. Taib. But needless to say, the district court assumed that Mr. Taib knew that he was aware of the representation.
Yeah.
However, even if he was aware of the representation, if he was aware of the Oregon retainer agreement, Burger King requires more. District of Columbia jurisprudence requires more. There is no mechanical test. You may not just allegedly sign an agreement and you automatically submit to jurisprudence. The Supreme Court has said clearly that is not enough. And the D.C. Court of Appeals and Environmental Research said the mere fact that a non-resident has reached into the District of Columbia to retain professional services does not confer jurisdiction.
Well, that's what. That's what about what about digital?
Digital is also distinguishable, Your Honor, because in digital broadcast, again, the court said that D.C. has an interest in redressing the wrongs inflicted upon its citizens. Citizens was a used word. The plaintiffs were D.C. firms. The defendants sought a special benefit of a D.C. lawyer. The defendants sought services specifically within D.C.
They did that here. These are D.C. lawyers.
But again,
to practice in the District of Columbia. What about what about Fisher, which digital relied on? How do you distinguish that case?
Fisher is the same thing. Fisher also noted that this redressing wrongs inflicted upon the citizens and the plaintiffs, again, was a D.C. law firm.
So you rely on the fact that these lawyers who were authorized to practice in the district, is that the only distinction in your mind? That they were partners in an Ohio firm?
There are multiple other distinctions. Other distinctions include there is no course.
But why would that be different? They're still citizens of the district. Aren't they?
The plaintiff here is a citizen of Ohio. It is an Ohio company and therefore
I'm
a citizen.
I'm talking about the lawyers who did the work in the Washington office.
The difference is in virtually every case, Cotin, Musaveri's, Digital Broadcast, Law Office of Jarris Leonard, all of these cases, the plaintiffs were D.C. lawyers or D.C. law firms. There is no D.C. lawyer plaintiff in this case.
Let's assume you're right about that. Why would that make a material difference in terms of the outcome?
Because the District of Columbia has an interest in redressing wrongs to its citizens. And one of the crucial...
So in other words, suppose the Washington office had 100 lawyers, okay, and the headquarters was in Ohio and it only had 25 lawyers and all 100 lawyers in the district were members of the D.C. bar. You would not be considered a citizen of the district because it was connected to because its parent was a small Ohio firm?
The answer is it really depends, Your Honor. Because
depends on what?
It depends on the multiple factors recognized by Burger King and other courts.
I'm just asking you to explain to me why the fact that these were Washington lawyers in the office of an out-of-state firm makes a difference for the jurisdictional issue.
Well,
I mean, you rely on this citizen quote, but... in Fisher, the court says, where an out-of-state client employs a D.C. lawyer to do work, it can hardly be said that litigation of a fee dispute with that same lawyer in the same form imposes any hardship. They don't mention the word citizen.
Well, again, that case is distinguishable because the case wasn't considering an out-of-jurisdiction plaintiff working within.
You still haven't explained to me what the difference is. I don't get it.
It goes into the calculus of factors, Your Honor. And then again, it goes back to Burger King.
But it has to be a material factor to go into the calculation of factors. Just explain to me what it is. Maybe there is a distinction. I don't see it. Tell me.
I believe the distinction would be what a defendant's reasonable expectation, what a plaintiff's reasonable expectation, and it goes into what the parties knew and understood. And when you have a D.C. plaintiff and you have a defendant working with a D.C. citizen, a D.C. plaintiff, it sets certain expectations of the parties. And that's why what many courts have considered as...
Why would the expectation be any different depending upon the corporate citizenship of the law firm if they in fact retain... attorney practicing in a D.C. office for the D.C. bar, why would it make any difference that the home office was in Cleveland or where it was in Ohio?
Because, again, it hails back to the Burger King factors. And what Burger King
this factor has to be of some difference before it can hark back to any kind of factor. Why would that make any difference?
Because it goes to what the reasonable expectations of the parties would be.
That's what I asked you. Why would that change the expectations of the parties? If I am employing a D.C. lawyer, you or anybody else is employing a D.C. lawyer, we would seem to expect them to be racking up billable hours in D.C. I don't see why it made a difference whether their home office was in Cleveland or on M Street.
For two major reasons, Your Honor. And number one, it goes to what the course of dealing of the parties was and what the expectation would be.
That's what I'm asking you about. Why wouldn't the expectation be any different? I've asked you three times.
Right,
don't tell me again that it depends on the expectation. Tell me why the expectation would be any different.
Because in this case, we had an Ohio law firm, and originally the retention was with a Georgia lawyer. The Georgia lawyer retains lawyers from all around the country to do the work. They pick lawyers from Ohio, they pick lawyers from D.C., and then they send it all over.
Counsel correctly corrected me on the letterhead of that engagement letter. It was on the D.C. letterhead. There's a recitation of the billing rate of D.C. lawyers. Mr. Heyer, at least one of the contacts was in D.C., wasn't it?
The Oregon retainer listed Mr. Linscott directly on there, as with his contact information as well, and the billing statement also reflected that Mr. Linscott, the Georgia lawyer, was still the supervising attorney. And also,
it also reflected hours by D.C. lawyers, and it also, the retention letter, reflected rates from D.C. right?
Yes, but again, that hails back to the expectation of the parties in the original FDA retainer, which isn't really an issue in this case, but it is because of the prior course of dealing. It only listed the billing rate for a Georgia lawyer, but then he brought in lawyers from Ohio and from D.C. and all over the country.
The Oregon letter did reflect rates of D.C. lawyers, did it not?
It reflected rates of D.C. lawyers, but again, the dealings of the parties indicated that it doesn't matter who is specifically listed on the retainer agreement. They farmed their work out all over the country, which was the prior course of dealing.
Does that make any difference if they expect that there's going to be work performed by D.C. lawyers in D.C.? Why would it deprive a jurisdiction that there's also going to be work performed in Georgia and Ohio?
Because, again, I think it goes back to where is the evidence in the record that specifically work was going to be performed in D.C., the substantial
rates of the D.C. lawyers in the retention.
But, again, this was for matter pending in Oregon, and what the dealing of the parties indicated was it doesn't matter which lawyer is listed on the letterhead, they're going to be farming it out around their entire firm, which is exactly what happened here. And importantly, the payments were to be made outside of the district at all times, most likely in Georgia. I see my...
I don't have any questions.
Anything further?
No.
For all of these reasons, we would request that this court affirm the well-reasoned opinion of the district court. Unless there are any further questions, I thank the court for its
thank
time.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant.
Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, I just want to make two points. One is the district court specifically found not only that Mr. Taib signed the letter, but also found that he reasonably expected that the work was going to be done in D.C. On the issue of citizenship, I would point out two things. First, no case has ever found that having the firm being organized under the laws of a different state means that it doesn't have citizenship for the purpose of determining personal jurisdiction.
Assuming it didn't have citizenship, would that be a point killer? If they reside here, if they do business here, do they have to be citizens in order to take advantage of long-arm statutes?
I believe that the case law under the D.C. long-arm statute makes clear that if the work is done in the district, you're transacting
really
business.
I'm wondering if it's not a privilege and immunity problem if the district reported only to protect the rights of its citizens as opposed to the rights of any American then in the district.
I agree with you, Your Honor. I would also make the other point that when Mr. Taib says that Thompson Hine is not a citizen of Washington, Mr. Schwartz points out in his affidavit that he is a partner of Thompson Hine, and for the purposes of diversity jurisdiction at least, a partnership, an LLP, is a citizen of every state in which it has a partner residing. So we are, Thompson Hine is in fact citizen of the District of Columbia. My time has expired. I thank you for your time, and we request the case be reversed and remanded to the district court.
Take the